right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one for episode 689. We've got a heck of a story here. Let me preface this conversation by saying the topic we're going to cover, I was told, I can't confirm any of this, but I was told this is why Libya was knocked over. I was told that the leader of that country had created what's called a primary water well, put in the infrastructure for the entire population to have free water. But anyone who's ever looked at primary water knows that it is very special. It is apparently very deep. There are those who claim it's available everywhere. There are those who make other claims. But what is known is that it is the most healthful liquid that can be obtained. The story goes that that country was knocked over, and that was one of the primary reasons, and the leadership removed. And then the people who did it came in, destroyed the infrastructure. And the story further goes that it was back flooded with seawater. Putting all that aside, because we can't confirm any of it, it should put a little underscore over what we're about to cover. The story is about Christine and Joe. Joe has been in jail for years now. Wrongly accused, he's being railroaded. Why? Because he accidentally discovered primary water. And I'm going to leave it there for now, but I will mention it has been a Herculean effort to get legal support from any angle. Almost everyone involved in this has been contacted in one way or another, or pushed out, or threatened out, or Lord only knows. If there is anyone out there who is good in a legal field and has a heart for mankind, this is one of those tales that matters. This is about like the birthright of humanity being suppressed, which has clearly been suppressed for a long, long time now. Having said that, welcome, Jason.
And a very Louisiana good afternoon.
All right. Welcome, Christine. Sorry to have you under these conditions. Is there anything you'd like to say before we start addressing what we've written down to cover?
Getting the exposure is our main concern. My husband's been locked up for over 2 years now for a lien charge, and this is unethical in every aspect. And any help we could get with attorneys that feel the need, see our what we're trying to do, that's it.
So apparently there's been a couple of delays filed, and even as we speak, another delay has been filed. Is that correct?
Yes. Our appeal brief that we have to get my husband out, they just filed for another extension. So this is the third extension by the state to answer our brief. So all the terms that we've laid out of why the trial was railroaded and certain aspects of things that were unethical, and they keep delaying their answer.
All right, so let's try to get as much information as we can into the time that we've got. Can you cover Joe's engineering background, please?
So he graduated high school. His father was a civil engineer, built bridges in Miami. He basically was raised around his dad learning civil engineering, and water and drainage and building all aspects, land development, everything like that he learned from his dad. He went to University of Florida and graduated engineering there in 93. He's done so many jobs all over, I mean, out of the country, all around Florida. He's very good at what he does. He's ethical. And a lot of it, when he gets hired by engineering firms, they seem to tend to want him to certify things that he shouldn't. And that's why he ended up going out on his own, because he wasn't willing to take a bribe or do anything and risk his engineering license, you know. So that's why he has his own company. And he worked, basically got hired by a group that was wanting to do a mining permit out in Sarasota. And that's how it started.
Okay, let me hold you right there. Can you tell us how you met Joe? Maybe cover your first date or however that goes, please.
Okay. Yeah, we actually met at a nightclub, a local neighborhood nightclub, and we met on the dance floor. I was just going into college and he was in the community college. We met at a place called Time Out and we went on our first date. And one of the most significant things we talked about was he brought up water on our first date. He's very smart. He likes to address things, deep conversation. And he brought up, "Do you know the most significant thing about water?" And I said, "No." And he said, "When it's in its solid phase, it's lighter than when it's in its liquid phase." So that was our first date and our first interaction. And we discussed water. And now we are going on almost 30 years. It'll be 30 years married in October.
I feel like I've got to quote the Blues Brothers here. Are you on a mission from God? Your first date covered water and here we are.
Yes, it's ironic. I mean, I don't understand, but there's a reason. And we definitely carried a burden for the past 13 years. And I think there's a meaning, there's a purpose for why he discovered it and everything. So,
well, I've been told when I found out about this kind of water source, primary water, the first thing I was told is it's extremely deep and most people don't drill that far. The second thing I was told is that it is of such purity and potency that it could change the living standards of the world in terms of health. But when I interrupted you to get that coverage of how you met under the same topic, you were just getting to Sarasota and this is where the meat and potatoes start, right?
Yeah. He basically got hired to do a mining permit and he got that permit and they did not pay him for the work he did. So he was going to lien the property. And then this group that hired him said, "Oh, wait, we want to do more and we didn't pay you because of this and that, but we want to expand. We want to do a fly-in community. We want to generate a lot of money for the farmer. And we need you to do all the engineering work." So they got into a contract and my husband produced all these plans and created like these 10-acre parcels in terms of a fly-in community for future sale. You know, like if the farmer wanted to piecemeal part of his property and sell part of it, it could fund him later in life. And my husband basically generated all these documents and produced them and delivered them. And again, they didn't pay him. So that's when my husband said, "Okay, something's going on. There's a reason." So he contacted a neighbor of the farmer and said, "I want to meet him. I want to tell him that this business partnership that he's got going on, they're not paying me. And I want to talk to him before I put a lien on his property. I just think that's the right thing to do." So a neighbor organized a meeting and they met at the Cracker Barrel and they all discussed what was going on. And the farmer was like, "I don't understand why you're the only one working."
Is this the meeting that changes everything?
Not yet, but okay. Yes. Yeah. This is where my husband starts to figure stuff out.
Okay.
So they told my husband that he goes by Buck, that he was a violent man. They told him, "If you step foot on the property, he'll blow you away," and all this stuff. So they tried to scare my husband into not wanting to meet Buck. And this meeting that he had and he met Buck, they instantly formed a friendship that's like to this day unmistakable. It's amazing how close they are and how they see things the same. And Buck told my husband, he's like, "I don't understand." He's like, "I've read your emails and you're the only one producing and doing work and they're not paying you. And I absolutely agree. You should lien the property. I don't know what's going on, why they're not moving forward." So my husband put a lien on the property and that's how it all started.
So is the next thing that happens the meeting? I want to keep this concise and going next. Is that the place to go, is the meeting?
Yeah. So after Buck tells him to lien the property, my husband starts to figure out that these people are delaying an agreement they have with the farmer. And it almost was like they were trying to get him in default, you know, of a contract so that they could maybe take his property. We weren't sure what it was about. So my husband said, you need to get rid of these people off your property. You don't need them. Let's open the permit for the water. So you have a well on the property. Let's go open that permit and we can grow sod and we can grow watermelon and generate money to pay whatever they got him into, like a predatory loan. And he said, let's just pay him off and get him out of here. So he went to a Southwest Florida Water Management District meeting. And at that meeting, there was a lot of extra people that attended, including attorneys, like county attorneys. And he thought it was odd, but he went forward with the meeting and he said, we just want to open this well because we want to open it for growing produce and stuff.
Do you know the depth of the well that they're trying to permit? Is this a deep well or a shallow well that they're trying to open?
We didn't know. My husband didn't know at the time how deep it was. He just knew he had several wells on the property. And the one that he wanted to open happened to be 1,509 feet deep.
Oh, wow. Okay. So for everybody listening, typically where I live, wells can be under 100 feet, but a typical well might go a couple hundred. When I was in San Diego, the same was true. They would go about 300. When you start talking about 1,500 feet, that is a deep well, and in most places, very expensive to drill. So go ahead, Christine.
Yeah, so he's at this meeting and there's people in there that are very nervous and he didn't understand why, because he pulls permits all the time and he's never seen this kind of behavior. And like one of the person in the meeting was sweating quite a bit and dripping, and he got the permit. He left the meeting and that night he woke up at like 3 a.m. and it hit him. He sat up out of bed, I'll never forget. And he said, oh my gosh, we got to call Buck. And he goes, I think I know what they're after. So he called Buck and Buck, he said, how deep is that well? And he said, oh, my daddy dug it in 1969. And I believe we went more than 1500 feet. And my husband's like, oh my gosh, I think they might be after your water. So it was that moment that he woke up at 3 a.m. that he said, all right, we need to get it tested. So that's when he started contacting different well companies, and numerous of them would not come out. For some reason, they canceled appointments with us. They wouldn't come. And my husband found a guy out of West Palm Beach who does aquifer maintenance. And he came out. At first, we sent him the water readings, which we got tested. We mailed it out to a laboratory. We got the results back and we didn't really know what they were, if it was good or bad. We just sent him the water results and was like, are you kidding me? Is this real? So he looked at the water readings and said, are these real? And my husband's like, well, yeah, we just got it tested and we need someone to come out and see how much water's down there, how much it could yield, if it could, you know, be used as a water source. And he made the appointment to come out to the farm and bring a big rig with the down the hole camera video so we could see what was down there. And when he came to the property, he told us that emails were being deleted off his screen and he knew something major was going on with this property. He said that when my husband sent him the request, he opened it up and he watched it like DOS, letter by letter being deleted.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy. And he said after, he came to the property, we were there all day and it was like an amazing experience because everyone there witnessed just a miracle, like how much water was actually down there. So he was telling us that what we tapped into was like the fountain of youth. And he said, this is going to change everything moving forward with your life.
You know, not to interrupt, but everybody knows the fountain of youth myth that we've all heard. That took place in Florida.
I know.
I'm starting to put one and one together here. And when you start talking about people having a back door into a computer, delete stuff, this is higher than just some people in a company, clearly.
Right. Yeah, there's someone up above that is pulling the strings on a lot of other people that are attacking us. So
I've got to ask, this well was dug back in the 60s. So I'm guessing back then it wasn't the same as it is now where you need to permit. My point being is, do you think you could even permit to dig a 1500 foot well these days?
I don't know. That's a question for my husband, but they make everything difficult now. I mean, from what I understand, people that dig their own wells, if they tap into anything somewhat decent, they're making them cap their wells. And I don't know.
How far away from Disney property is this going on where you're at the well with a camera? Are you in the realm of whatever it is, that big Orange County or whatever it's called?
It's about 2 hours, 2.5 maybe.
All right, let me pull you back on. So you've got the camera down the hole. You've stated people witnessed a miracle, both because of the purity of the water and the sheer volume that it was producing. So please pick up there.
Yeah, so when we realized how much was down there, basically we were told it's unlimited. It's recharging itself and it could service like definitely all of Florida. And my husband instantly was like, we need to bring this to the municipalities and show them this is a better drinking source for everyone, and didn't go quite the way he thought it would go. They weren't receptive. The first email he sent to the government agency, he was intercepted by an ombudsman telling him, you are no longer to contact government agencies. I am your point of contact.
What is an ombudsman?
I guess it's someone who intervenes on behalf of government agencies. He was directed as the point of contact to tell my husband, stop basically what you're doing and you listen to me and follow what I tell you.
Does it feel like that? Did Joe unknowingly out himself, or do you feel like you were already known before that all happened? The water source and their want to protect it or take it.
Yeah, I think they already knew. And as soon I think they thought my husband knew before he knew. And my husband literally stumbled on it. And that's what makes it so beautiful, in my opinion, that he uncovered something that could potentially be life-changing for so many. And we're watching just this horrible group of people hide it. And that's the biggest thing. We're all trying to figure out exactly what they're hiding it for or who for.
My guess would be that the answer is in every supermarket. Right now, when you get anything to drink, it's in plastic. If it gets tested, there's microplastic. If you drink it in aluminum, you'll test that and there will be traces, which is clearly both of those things add to dementia. I think there's a clear effort to allow people to damage themselves to reduce populations for the kind of world control that we see. But before we get into Joe's engineering theory here, the last bullet point in this section says, Joe explains why he believes this is fundamentally different from conventional groundwater. Can you just expound that a little bit so people kind of get the gravity of what we're talking about?
Well, he believed this water was potentially an antioxidant. Clearly, it measured like it could service more than Florida and supply so many different communities with better drinking quality.
The pH and the purity also off the scales. Was the pH perfectly neutral?
Yeah, it was 7.49, I believe.
What I read said the purity was off the charts.
Well, certain depths, it changes. But from our initial reading, I believe it came at 7.49. I know my husband would want to be the one to talk about the water and what it can do. And
We will get there. We're going okay. to have Joe on. So let's go ahead and step forward into Joe's engineering theory. So it starts out by stating the difference between conventional groundwater and what your husband calls primary water.
Well, he thought it came from the KT event, the meteor impact, like buckling Florida out of the ocean. My husband believes that there's many of these resources all over, and he actually knows how to find them now. So he also found one in New York and met with Mayor Eric Adams. And he basically told them where they could find another. It's a volcanic resource, but deep in the earth, and it could service all of New York. And right now their aqueducts are failing. So it was a pretty intense meeting that they had, and more happened on that end, but I don't want to get into that right now.
Okay. And to make the point, something like this, which I've been told two things, that primary water is available everywhere. And then I've also been told a subset of that where it's in a lot of places, but not everywhere. But the thing here is, consider a source of water like this, where you're tapping a single well and people are saying things like, this could supply the state and the purity is off the charts and the pH is just perfect. A place like California, that would change everything. You know, these desert towns or these fire areas. And when you begin to consider how we do things, everybody knows that we're being metered and we're being charged for the water. And where I live, people, a lot of them are on wells, but the town does everything they can to get that city water out to places. And when they do, they tell people, you've got to cap your well now. And people don't want to do that because they feel their well water is superior to treated water. And so you see what's going on here. And from any other standpoint that you could think of, if this was tapped and as plentiful as people have claimed it is, not only would the health benefits be off the charts, but the ability of people to meter and control water would be diminished.
Yeah. I mean, this would generate lower water bills everywhere because you don't need to treat it. You might need to filter it, but it doesn't need to be treated. And what they're putting in our water today is, it's sickening. And I know my husband, his attempts to get it out there, they're making it seem like it's not in our best interest to bring better water to people. So they're basically trying to keep people sick. That's what we're seeing. They want to keep these cancer centers opening on every corner, and they want people in the hospitals. But now it's affecting the kids more than anything. And that's where it really tugs at us, and especially my husband, because a lot of kids are coming out with neurological issues now, and it's directly coming from the water supply. So he's devoted a lot of time and everything to this. And I would like to see somehow someone ethical come forward. And I don't know how to do that. Just trying to tell our story so we can maybe get someone who can help us.
So when we look at where we are at right now, and what I have been constantly saying is, we've lived all of our lives in systems that are about service to self. They're very low vibrational. They're very selfish systems. We are headed into an era of service to others. And the reason to state this for the thousandth time is because the energy that has allowed these older low vibrational systems to go on is coming to an end now. So covering things like we are here, maybe we will have someone who's can contribute in a meaningful way, who's actually a human being, who actually has a heart, who actually doesn't view the world where decency should be against the law, which is kind of where we are now. You can almost imagine the authorities buckling and having to deal with something like this, and then putting out the press release that, oh, clearly this water needs to be treated. You know, this is the kind of things we've been seeing through our lifetimes. But right now, everything is changing. And I certainly have hope in my heart that what we cover here may help in some way to start to turn the tide in the right direction. But with the limited time, I want to keep us on track. And just so everybody knows, we will have Joe His direct coverage of this will be included in what we're doing here. Jason, is there anything you want to add in here?
Did you guys ever get the idea that other people, or maybe companies or government agencies, really knew that the water was there and how extensive it truly was?
Yes. So there was a gentleman my husband worked with. We'll just call him Rob. He was coming to live with us until he found a place to live. And he was going to help us with the water, like pipeline. And he used to do water treatment and stuff. So he knew what we found was significant. So he was stopping what he was doing and moving down this way to help with the project. And he got intercepted on his way to live with us. And the governor at the time, he basically, I think, interrogated him. But we got a text message that said, "It's all about Nestle, Joe." And my husband's like, "What? What is he talking about?" And then he posted a picture of him and Governor Scott, and it was him ducking out, like under his arm, he took a picture and he said, "Oh, I met with Governor Scott today. I wished him well and he wished me well," laugh out loud. And then I told my husband, "Oh, I just saw a picture that Rob posted." And my husband looked at it and he's like, "That's weird." And then the next day, another picture got posted and Governor Scott is like holding Rob in the picture, in the photo, and his face is beet red. And we have that on our website.
As a mock picture, or was this literally happening in your view?
It literally happened. He posted the picture. It got taken down, but we had already taken a screenshot of it and we have it. And he basically disappeared. He stopped replying. We never knew what happened to him. And I had people reach out to him to make sure he was okay. And apparently he married into the Walton family.
Wow.
Yeah.
Of Walmart fame. Is that the Walton
yes.
family?
Yeah.
My word. So the Nestle, did you put anything together there? I mean, Nestle is a major corporation.
Yeah. So Mosaic is another avenue. I think that was after the water because they offered a lot of money through a second party, someone that deals with Mosaic and has many leases with Mosaic, basically came to my husband and the farmer and offered. They started at $50 million to walk away and then raised it to $500 million. So these were, of course, clues that we thought, okay, this is a lot bigger.
We know your husband is ethical and didn't blink. Did the farmer walk away?
No, he said it's about the kids and it's about bringing the water to the people. And I think our first gut instinct we should stick with. And that was based on honor and a handshake. My husband and him just shook on it. And he said, "You know, you've protected this." You know, Buck is not a controversial person. He doesn't like to fight with people. And
he didn't accept.
Right.
And to this day, he still held his ground.
Absolutely.
So we've got two American heroes that are actually adult human beings in our midst in this story so far. Well, three if we want to include you as well. All right. So where do we pick up to keep this concise? Are we at public outreach?
Yeah. We've been to many commission meetings. We have brought the water samples to different counties, and we did not get the reception that we were hoping for. We couple times got escorted out by cops telling us this isn't on the agenda. You can't talk about this stuff. Basically leave. We've been to hospitals bringing the sample of water, letting them try it, test it, see if it could help with dialysis, whatever we could do to try and help people, and getting chased off campuses and everything because obviously this is a big deal and people aren't allowed to speak about it. So that part of it is really sad that you don't have this overwhelming, like, "Oh my gosh, let's try this, see if it could help this person or that person." You don't have that. You have everybody running in fear and like ducking. So my husband had reached out to another local farmer, and he's actually a very good guy as well, and helping with keeping things while my husband's being subdued. But my husband basically got subdued back in 2013 when he was sending the emails after we found the water and was arrested for basically mass emailing without a purpose. And he got bond that was $500 per charge. And it was the three attorneys from Mosaic that put the charges on my husband.
Is that a legitimate crime? And is it state or federal?
This was state. And I don't think it was a legitimate crime because Governor Scott raised the charge to a felony. It was a misdemeanor, I guess, to... They consider it more like obnoxious, or I don't know what they call it.
Well, who was harmed? This is a bit hard to take from the outset because there's no victim. And when you take it up to the level of felony, this just seems like absolute railroading.
That's what happened. So he was with Judge Conrad, and then suddenly they upped the statute of what emails, I don't know if they call them threatening emails, but basically where they cause people discomfort or whatever, they raised that to a felony. And my husband's bond went from $500 per charge to $100,000 per charge.
How many charges?
He had three.
Okay. And then that jumped again.
Yep. To $300,000. And then the judge recused himself. And that's when it got nasty. That's kind of when the Boston event and everything happened. So they took my husband off the street. They raised his bond where we couldn't afford it. And they were torturing him in jail. And I was a mess because he was the sole provider. I was a stay-at-home mom at the time. And he just disappeared, was taken off the streets. They came to my house, our house, and surrounded my house with U.S. Marshals. And they basically, my husband was obtaining another permit for another client who had a gas station, and he was downtown Tampa at the time. And he called me and asked me if everything was okay. And I said, yeah, everything's fine. And he said, well, just weird things are happening. I just wanted to check on you. And I said, okay, everything's fine. And then wasn't even 10 minutes later, I got up out of my bedroom and my entire back patio, we had sliders, was all men with guns. And then I called my husband back and basically told him what was going on. And he said, call the news right now, because I think something's going on major. He's like, go to the neighbors, call the news, don't open the door. And then next I called my neighbor and she came over. They all came in my home, started going through my house, held me up against the garage.
Did they produce a warrant?
No.
Did you ask for a warrant?
Yes. I asked for a warrant. I asked, what was this about? And so there was one woman in the whole group, and she said, I don't know my husband. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, do you know where he is? And I said, yes, he's pulling a permit. He's in Tampa downtown. I said, I can get him on the phone. So I literally called him, and he was being already captured at the time.
By marshals. Were these U.S. marshals, federal marshals?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. No, they had vests on that said U.S. marshals. But no, they didn't show me anything physical except guns and threatening to kill my dog. And it was a mess. But they are basically holding me outside and telling me that they're looking for my husband. And I told them, well, he's not in my house, but they went through my home anyway. And I got him on the phone. And I guess at that time he was being captured no news came, even though my neighbors and my family tried calling and saying something's going on and gave my address and nobody came. I just had like 8 or 9 U.S. Marshal vehicles in my yard. And there was a gentleman that pulled up that was, I think, tried to meet my husband and tried to get him to do unethical things. And my husband didn't fall for it. And he showed up and drove up on my lawn. And that guy, his name was Carl, the U.S. Marshals kicked him off because I said, this man doesn't belong here. And they said, well, he said he's your bail bondsman. And I said, no, he's not our bail bondsman.
Why was he there? How did he know to be there?
Because he was helping, trying to get my husband arrested. So he was part of the group and he friended my husband. Like, I don't even know how he met. I think it was at the gym. So I think it was like he targeted him and tried to, a lot of that went on. And I can't even tell you how many, like 5, 6 different people tried to befriend my husband and tried to get him to do stuff and he didn't fall for it.
Do you have cameras in your house?
I have them here now, but I did not back then.
None, nothing outside. So there were no cameras.
No, but my neighbor did video. So she told me she has a video of when they came. Anyway, then they took him and I didn't hear from him for months, like a month and a half. I didn't hear one word and he wasn't appearing in court. And I was a mess. I was like, I don't know, like 90 pounds. I was so sick.
You didn't even know where he was being held.
No, I looked him up and saw that he was at Falkenberg, but I didn't, no one confirmed anything. I went to the jail. I said, please give this to my husband, tell him to call me. And that was his glasses. And they said, oh, he's in a suicide watch. And I said, a suicide watch? That's insane. He's not suicidal at all. Never has been. And they said, well, he's in a whatever highest ranking watch. Then he had a court appearance and again, he didn't show. And I broke down in the courtroom and I said, I don't understand what's going on. My husband's supposed to be here. I haven't seen or heard from him in a month. I need to know how my husband's doing. And that's when Christopher came in. We hadn't secured a public defender yet. We were still thinking whether we wanted to get a private attorney or the public defender. And I said, I need help. I haven't heard from my husband. They're telling me he's suicidal. And he said, I can check for you.
Now, who is Christopher? Is he a public defender?
He was a public defender.
And he just happened to be in the courtroom?
I think he was there on something else, but we heard that he would be our public defender if we wanted one, that was who it was going to be.
He was assigned by the court.
Right.
When you said what you said in the courtroom, the judge, nobody said anything to you?
The judge said something to the state prosecutor and said, I want to know what's going on. Why wasn't he brought in? And she said something about, oh, there was a problem with transport. And another time there was a problem in one of his pods, a fight broke out and he wasn't able to come, whatever. They had excuses for not bringing him to court. And Christopher, at that time, I was really thinking of hiring him because I wanted him to go speak with my husband and I wanted to find out if my husband was okay. So my only contact was a doctor at the jail, and she kept telling me that my husband was suicidal. And I said, you know, I'm going to let you talk to his mom, who was a head nurse at Broward General. She knows what suicidal people are like, and I want you to tell her what you're noticing my husband doing. And I said, and on top of that, I want you to give me my husband's file. I want to see for myself because it's not like my husband not to call and I want his file. And she said, well, it's going to take a week or so. And I said, I don't care. Get me his file. And then I put my mother-in-law on the phone and my mother-in-law basically said, nope, he's not suicidal. You're not telling me anything that's showing he's suicidal. And she said, oh, I think you need to transfer him right away to a state suicide hospital. And my mother-in-law is like, no. And then she didn't produce the file like I asked. So I started contacting the health agency that was the go-between between Falkenberg Jail.
Okay, so to pull back around, how does Christopher confirm Joe's suspicions about the property and the water project?
Okay, so before we hired Christopher, I had ordered the file on my husband and I didn't get it in the 5 days that she told me. So I contacted the agency, the go-between, which was called Armor, and they were out of Miami. And when I contacted them, they put me straight through to risk management. And a lady gets on the phone and she says, now, can you tell me how long your husband has been in Falkenberg? And I said, it's been over a month and a half and he hasn't appeared in court and I haven't heard from him. And my husband and I have never gone a day without speaking. And they're telling me he's suicidal. And she's like, wait, stop right there. What is your husband's name? And I told her, and she said, do I have your permission to call over there? And who is the doctor that you're dealing with? And I told her the doctor's name. And she said, something's going on because I go to Tampa twice a week and I meet with that specific doctor. And she never mentioned your husband. So I don't know where they're holding him, but something is going on. And I said, call over there. She said, do I have your permission to call? And I said, yes. And it wasn't even 4 hours later. And my husband called and he said, oh my God, whatever you've done, you've rattled chains. They just pulled me out of like a hole and I had no clothes on. He said they were hosing him, all sorts of things. He just sounded so relieved. And he said, whatever you did, they are now pulling me out of the worst cell and putting me into some trustee type cell. And he was like, I love you. I'm so sorry you're going through this.
What was the organization that you contacted and what was the first name of the person and their position that made the call?
Okay. Armor was the health agency. And Marta was the name of the lady I spoke with. And Dr. Weaver was the doctor in Tampa that was telling me my husband was suicidal.
Is that the only intervention that that organization has done for you? Because clearly whatever they did worked.
Oh, absolutely. Whatever she did, it caused something major because Falkenberg and Armor severed ties shortly after. So whatever contract they had, they ended up severing ties right after that.
Have you contacted her since?
No.
I think you should. I think it sounds like an individual who is forthright was not willing to accept the horror show that she witnessed. I think maybe that might be worth another call.
Yeah, actually, I thought about that several times. And
it also sounds like she's got the boots on. Or that wouldn't have changed anything. I think I might make that one of my first calls. All right, go ahead.
So then after I spoke with my husband, I said, can we hire this public defender? And my husband kept saying no, because everyone apparently at the jail was saying Christopher was horrible. And I'm talking to his mom and we're just concerned that he's not getting represented. And we were basically hiring him anyway. And I told Christopher we wanted to retain him, you know, or keep him for my husband. And please, can I meet with him to discuss what's going on?
So basically, the only legal help that you have is from a court appointed public defender, which is usually lowest on the totem pole. And your husband has heard inside that this isn't the best guy.
Correct.
All right.
My husband had hired, when he first got arrested and he had the lower bond, he had hired an attorney. His name was Dirk. He wasn't very good either. So we hired him and he was a joke.
Well, Christopher should be free to you. He's a public defender.
Correct. He was free.
You should not be charged for that. Do you still have a relationship? Is that what you have legally right now?
No, now I have a private attorney for the appeal. So we decided, yes, we want to move forward with him representing my husband. And I went to his office and explained some of the stuff. And I said, oh my God, they were telling me my husband was crazy. And he goes, your husband is not crazy. And I thought to myself, okay, this is a good guy. He's telling me the truth. And then we started preparing for trial and stuff. And he got pulled from our case right before trial. And Judge Conrad at the time, he said, oh, Mr. Gilberti, if you want to postpone your trial, we can do that since Christopher had to take a leave. No, I'm not postponing it. I want to go to trial. I don't want to sit in here any longer. So they decided to assign my husband another public defender. And he said, well, why don't you take a few weeks to talk with this and basically convey where you're at with your case. And my husband's like, I don't need any time. I didn't do anything. They don't have anything. We're going to trial. And basically, in a long story, making it short, he went to trial and no one showed up and the charges were null processed or null proce or whatever they call it.
So they dropped it.
Yes.
So much for a right to a speedy trial.
Uh-huh. But the judge, Conrad, 3/4 of the way through the trial or the court proceedings, he decided to tell us that he used to be a mediator for Southwest Florida Water Management District.
Oh, man.
And I was like, well, that's a conflict considering, you know, they know about the well. And
why did he say that? Was he feeling you out?
I think he was feeling guilty. Like he witnessed how many people showed up for my husband in court. He saw me basically pleading and crying and going through so much. I think he had a heart and he just felt like I better disclose this. So there's no, I don't know. But he also, my husband's father was found dead in his home during the time my husband was being tortured in jail. And Christopher told me that Judge Conrad reached out to him and said, let's get this ankle monitor set up for Mr. Gilberti so he can attend his father's funeral. So I think he had a good heart, but he was going with the motions.
If you don't mind me asking, was that cause of death made worse because of what was going on?
I believe, absolutely. My parents believe. I was up in Tampa. My mother-in-law was up in Tampa helping me because at the time I went to get a job because my husband was gone and we had no income. So my mother-in-law came to help us and my father-in-law was supposed to meet me at the farm on a Wednesday to resurvey where the well was at. And we were meeting with our surveyor and everything, and he didn't show up to the property. And we thought that was odd. And then I tried calling him and he didn't answer. And my mother-in-law didn't seem concerned at first. She said, well, maybe he's got stuff going on. And I said, no, he wouldn't have canceled. He would have canceled, called me and canceled. He didn't show. He didn't. So then the next morning, he didn't answer again. And then she checked her credit cards to see if he went shopping or something and nothing. He wasn't answering anyone's calls. So then she said, I'm going home to check on him. And when she got, his truck was in the driveway and she peeked in the window because the door was locked. And he literally had the chain on the door or something. She couldn't get in. And she peeked in the window and saw that there was dog poop everywhere. So she knew something, you know, that he wasn't in good condition. So she called the cops and they came and they wouldn't even let her in the house. And then my parents showed up and wouldn't let my parents in the house until they removed his body. And it was just horrific.
So your husband never gets to see his father again as a result of being incarcerated incommunicado.
Yeah. He was in the courtroom one time where my husband got to see him. And after that, he was supposed to meet us at the property. I think they were on to what we were doing with the property. And I believe it was targeted.
Why wouldn't they let anyone see the body? Is there some reason to be concerned?
I don't know, because I came home to help, you know, and prepare for the funeral and stuff. And the cameras were cut outside. So he had cameras on the front of the house and the back of the house.
And they were off?
And they were cut. The lines were cut.
Oh, my.
So I don't know. Something just doesn't seem right.
Literally cut? The wires were cut?
Yes.
What was the cause of death? Do you know? What was the reported cause of death?
They said natural causes, but his own doctor didn't want to sign off on the death certificate because I guess she had met with him the Tuesday before and didn't want to sign the death certificate.
All right, we're going to take a short break for hour one. There's so much more to get in. Jason, do you want to add anything? I'm just going to wrap here and we'll come back for hour two.
Yeah, just the fact that if you really are doing something to rock the boat, they will turn the system against you. That's what this is.
It is incredible now that everything gets filmed and broadcast, the level at which our legal system is used to railroad people. We're seeing it all over the place. And I, for one, can't wait until actual human beings with scruples and ethics start to pull back and get rid of this perversion, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wrap here. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in. They get access to all the forums and comment sections, free access to the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon, and they get exclusive access to my current solar work. There's much more going on there. I hope to see you all logged in as members. We're going to take a very short break, be back for hour two. And also, Joe will be heard from before we're done here. With that, I'd like to wish everybody everywhere a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers. We'll be right back.
is the enemy of knowing.